Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, the legendary cartoonist Jules Feiffer at age 85. He has released his first graphic novel, call it a comic book noir thriller, entitled Kill My Mother. Jules Feiffer today. Also today, are airline tickets always cheaper on sites like Orbitz or Kayak? You may be surprised to hear the answer. But first, we mentioned yesterday the New York Times non-endorsement in the Democratic primary for governor of New York. It was in yesterday's paper, and of course you could see it online. They said Andrew Cuomo has failed at what he identified as job one in his initial campaign, rooting out corruption in New York state government. But the Times editorial said Cuomo's primary opponent, Zephyr Teachout, doesn't have the breadth of interests or experience to actually run a big, diverse state. So no endorsement. But is this a cop-out? And does it mean the New York Times, which generally advocates for voter participation, is recommending you stay home on primary day, Tuesday, September 9th, in the gubernatorial race? If you saw today's paper, they did endorse Teachout's running mate, Tim Wu, over Cuomo's running mate, Kathy Hochul, for lieutenant governor. So let's talk about today's endorsement and yesterday's non-endorsement. We are very happy to have with us Terry Tang, the deputy editorial page editor at The Times. Hi, Terry. Thanks so much for coming on to do this. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on.
Governor first. For people who didn't read it, do you want to lay out your case in a little more detail for why the decision not to endorse?
Well, sure. You know, it was an unusual thing for us because, you know, we looked at these two candidates and we spent a lot of time debating, looking at the governor's accomplishments against his failings and looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the challenger. And, you know, in most cases we do endorse. But in this case, we felt that while Governor Cuomo has had strong achievements in some places, that the number one thing that we have been very vocal about, very strong about, is corruption and campaign finance and a broken electoral system in New York State. And that, he had said, was his big promise, his job one, and he did not deliver on that. And so we really had to weigh that against some of his achievements, which we have lauded. His opponent in this case happens to be a real national leader and expert on that job one. So we looked at that, and I think we have to kind of go back and see why this is job one, why he called it that, and why for us it was foundational about electoral politics in New York.
Yeah, tell us why.
Because we probably have the worst of all possible worlds here. We've got campaign finance donations that are basically unbridled and unlimited. There are limits set in the law, but those limits are extremely high, but they don't mean anything.
As you point out, the limits are unbelievably high in New York State. I mean, you can't donate as much to a presidential candidate as you can to a candidate for office in New York State. An individual can give $60,000. Isn't that the number?
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, you know, if you don't have to abide by that. Because
even that.
Truly, even that. That is high, but that's just what's written on the books. What matters for big donors, particularly people, you know, in industries like real estate, for example, you can set up limited liability corporations set up by individuals, which can give basically almost an unlimited amount of money. And if you can give $60,000 a year to a candidate through one of these LLCs. It's legal. But the thing is, you can set up as many LLCs as you want. So there is really no effective cap on how much you can give.
Mm-hmm.
So Governor Cuomo, he has part of his, he's proposed legislation that would close out this loophole, for example. But that hasn't gone anywhere. And frankly, he's been a real beneficiary of this loophole. I hate to call it a loophole because it's actually a primary conduit of campaign donations. And when you back up and you say, well, what's wrong with big campaign donations? It's that it gives people a huge voice. And even the Moreland Commission, which we've all heard about, which was disbanded by the governor, was looking at how can you tell when big parts of money come through and very narrowly tailored legislation benefits those donors. And that's why campaign finance and corruption is kind of very tied together in New York. And we've got this situation where even when the legislature does good things, when the governor does good things that we support as a newspaper, as an editorial board, the foundation of it is very anti-democratic. So that was always a very big, important.
And you're saying that's job one. It was job one, according to Cuomo,
right,
in his initial campaign. But you're also saying, for the Times, it's maybe the most important issue facing New York State government at this time because it flows down to policy on all the other issues.
On all levels, right.
And Cuomo's opponent is Zephyr Teachout, who is, as you acknowledge, a nationally recognized expert on corruption. She has a book called Corruption in America, for example, teaches at Fordham Law School. But even with that impassioned plea that you just gave us, you didn't endorse her.
Well, because, I have to say, an endorsement is a recommendation. We have to feel completely confident that we can recommend this candidate for this job. And Zephyr Teachout is a very accomplished person in that field, but this is a very very big state, very complicated state government, and she hasn't run state government. She hasn't been in elected office. She hasn't had any political experience. So that really, that was a serious issue for us because we do tilt towards experience. That's an important factor.
Management experience in this case, right?
Well, yes, and the ability to have, an ability to run a very big big government with lots of diverse and competing needs, aside from that particular issue. So we do have to look at the whole person and the whole candidate and their entire background. That's not to say that, and obviously every office has different requirements. So,
And
so that's where we came out on
chief
that.
Executive of the state of New York and 17 million people or whatever our population is now. So, listeners, did you read the New York Times non-endorsement in the gubernatorial primary yesterday? Do you want to call in and talk to Terry Tang, deputy editorial page editor at the Times, 212-433-WNYC, or you can comment on today's endorsement of Teachout's running mate Tim Wu over Kathy Hochul, Cuomo's running mate for lieutenant governor. Terry Tang is here, 212-433-WNYC. So, as you know, people don't line up around the block to vote in primaries to begin with.
And no, they don't.
There isn't a third candidate on the ballot who fits all your criteria. So is it irresponsible to even tacitly give people more of an excuse not to vote at all?
No. We want people to make to vote, to be engaged. And what we felt, and we don't do this often at all, is to give them our thinking. And again, I think, each member of the board will vote, people who live in New York will vote, and they will have to make that decision. Where are they going to, where will they fall? And they will make that decision. But
I guess, if the editorial board was a person, it would not. I mean, ExxonMobil is a person under the law. The editorial page of the New York Times is not. But if thank you, Citizens United.
That's the problem right there.
Right. But if the editorial board was a person, it sounds like it would stay home on primary day.
No, I don't think so. But, votes in this country are private, right? No, what we wanted to do was to truly lay out something that was clear in our thinking and to give voters having analyzed and weighed this and researched as much as we could, and we've been researching this for Governor Cuomo's entire term. This is where we came out. And I do think that the thing is that we do have, you know, a lot of times we are forced to choose between two flawed candidates. Lots of factors go into it. It's not black and white. It's not a perfect candidate versus someone who's utterly unqualified. But we do have to feel that the person we recommend, we can do so having enthusiastically supported that person's positive attributes, or alternatively, if the opponent is just a unacceptable for whatever reason or utterly unqualified, we will make that recommendation also, too.
Right. Yes, let me read for our listeners a couple of lines from the editorial board, mm-hmm. and then ask you to help me read between the lines. The last line of the editorial says, having walked away from his most important goals, he, Cuomo, should not be surprised if many Democrats walk away from him on September 9th. Now, that sounds more like political analysis than an editorial, but it seems like you're making a suggestion there. And earlier you had a line that said, those who want to register their disappointment with Mr. Cuomo may well decide the best way to do that is to vote for Ms. Teachout. Despite our reservations about her, that impulse could send a powerful message to the governor. Again, it's stated like political analysis, but really you walked right up to the line of saying, Democrats cast this protest vote. And some of my colleagues here think that's what you were saying to do, but with a wink, not directly.
I don't think it's a wink. I think the fact that it's a non-endorsement, laying out the deficits and of the challenger and Mr. Cuomo's failings by our lights and our disappointment with him, I don't think it's a wink. It lays it out there. And if we're really upfront.
You mean, so you are recommending?
You are recommending
a vote for Teachout then?
No, I think we are laying it out there. And we do say that realistically, Governor Cuomo is likely to win the primary. I mean, he has more than $35 million to Zephyr Teachout's. Maybe she's up to $400,000.
Yeah, that's political analysis. That could be on the
news
page.
Well, we like to recognize reality too, so that we're aware of the political realities. But we do want to say that that is kind of the reality, and we're not saying that there is a need for, I mean, we're not asking people to go out there and make a protest vote. But this is where we came down, that our disappointment with him is real and very substantial on this point. And that's where we came down.
And my guest is Terry.
And he has had strong achievements we have supported.
Terry Tang, deputy editorial page editor of the New York Times, on their non-endorsement yesterday in the Democratic primary for governor of New York. Our caller board, I think, looks a lot like your comments page. So let's hear a few of the voices. Vered in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I'm even more outraged after listening to your speaker from the New York Times. I really feel I get the Times every day, and I feel that the Times in this instance was highly irresponsible. It was inexcusable. And I think what it did was undemocratic.
Why? Make your case.
Because it said Cuomo did not fail doing the most important job. And then said his opponent is definitely versed in it. And so that's the most important job. So if we get a candidate who can actually do it, well, then support this candidate. It shied from that, and I think it played it safe because it probably knew that Cuomo would win because of all his money, et cetera, and it didn't want to be on the wrong side.
But they also said she's never run anything and she hasn't really taken an interest in lots of other issues. Does that not matter to you?
The most important thing, clean up the state, that would even be enough. That's how I feel.
Vered, thank you very much. Let's go to somebody. Unless you want to respond to that, Terry, we can let it stand for itself and go to another caller.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, people do feel that way. They want a black and white thing. I think that we, you know, our job is really to illuminate things from how we stand, and we do a lot of research, and this is how, so we offer that as an informed opinion, and sometimes we can, sometimes that's what we can offer. And we've laid out what we think are the Zephyr Teachout's deficits, and I think she's quite aware of those.
Asher in Woodmere, you're on WNYC.
Good
Hello.
Morning. It's so nice to hear this topic. They are spot on. The New York Times is in this non-endorsement. I made it part of my Facebook comment yesterday.
Spot on. So you like the Republic. Asher, you like the non-endorsement?
Yes, endorsement, my non-endorsement. As a liberal Republican, I look with eagerness to the protest vote that will surely come substantially on September 9th. I'm a Javits Rockefeller Leftwich group, and it's no accident that this is part of a triumvirate. It's not only Cuomo who backed away from campaign reform and anti-corruption legislation. Also, Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, who ironically were a triumvirate going to Israel away from the issue to confront it. So I think it will give us all hope if the professor gains a substantial number of votes in the primary.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. David in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Thank you. When he established the Medicaid Commission at the beginning of his office, he stocked it with people that came from hospitals, doctor organizations, insurance organizations. He only had one person that worked and represented people. When he established the Moreland Commission, he does the same thing. And then he said he was against corruption and that kind of influence. I think we must vote for somebody like Teachout who is against that. And if she could get number one, according to Cuomo, thing done,
except for the name,
that would be excellent.
David, thank you very much. Did you pick up that little Andrew Cuomo accent in his voice there, Terry? But he was critiquing.
Governor, was that you?
Don't think quite. He wouldn't have mangled his own name. But he talked about the Moreland Commission, and I do want to note that you wrote in your editorial, and I'm going to look for the exact reference here, that Cuomo's worst moment of all, and now I'm reading your words, Cuomo's worst moment of all came when he blocked the progress of the independent commission he set up to investigate corruption after the panel began to look into issues that may have reflected badly on him and his political supporters. So that's pretty bad, probing the influence of campaign spending but refusing to look at the influence of campaign spending on yourself. As you know, the U.S. attorney is looking into this. I wonder if you could talk about that in a little more detail. Which supporters and how do you think he might have been made to look bad if the Moreland Commission had been allowed to complete its work?
Well, it sort of goes back to something which I had mentioned I think there was a lot of real estate donors to his, to his campaign through these LLCs, and the Moreland Commission had raised concerns about those very large donations coming to his campaign and of other politicians' campaigns too, through these LLCs, and whether there was, tax benefit given to some of the companies that put money into these LLCs. And, that's to be resolved. The Moreland Commission in its December report, I believe, raised that issue. Is there, it's impossible, it's very hard to show any kind of quid pro quo, but the fact is they were concerned about the influence between large contributions and very targeted benefits. So that's something that was out there. And, of course, the governor's view is that the Moreland Commission was really just a crowbar to get some reforms from the legislature. And he felt he got what he needed was something like, you know, strengthening in the anti-bribery laws, for example. But the big thing, like campaign, both, you know, public financing of campaigns, which would allow more competition for some of these, you know, entrenched incumbents who never leave office, he said he couldn't get. But then, so he said basically that the Moreland Commission was just kind of a you know, a crowbar for that. It didn't have a purpose really on its own. It was intended to get something else.
And he got the best deal that he felt he could get.
That's right.
So he traded it in.
He traded it in. So he shut it down, and he said, it was my commission. I can shut down anything I created, so I'm shutting it down.
And my guest is Terry Tang from the New York Times editorial board. You know, even though Zephyr Teachout supporters, it seems like, are not very happy with you, she didn't sound that disappointed yesterday. Listen.
The New York Times came as close to an endorsement as it possibly could without an actual endorsement.
So she sounded almost downright giddy at your non-endorsement. And I want to go on to your endorsement today in the lieutenant governor primary. And in this case, you did actually endorse Teachout's running mate, Columbia University law professor Tim Wu, over Cuomo's running mate, former Western New York Congresswoman Kathy Hochul. Why Tim Wu?
Well, it's a very different office, right? I mean, it is a job where it's largely a bully pulpit, if you can even get the kind of media coverage that I suppose lieutenant governors might want. But a lot of times they don't even get that. So it's a bully pulpit. It has far less, far less responsibility for running state government.
And to Terry's point, by the way, everybody, who can name the current lieutenant governor under Andrew Cuomo who would be replaced by Kathy Hochul? Okay, everybody shout it out. Ready? One, two, three. Dead silence across the metro area.
Yes, yes. Well, there you have it. And we actually then, therefore, were less, you know, we were less concerned about Tim Wu's lack of political and government experience, because he isn't going to be running a very big state and a very big state bureaucracy.
But can I jump in on that? Because Wu is a college professor and policy intellectual, just like Zephyr Teachout. And if he's elected and anything happens to the governor, he would be in charge of this big, diverse state. So often that's the first question asked of a vice presidential candidate or a lieutenant governor candidate. Are you capable of stepping in and running the state should something happen to the governor? But you seem to have dismissed that as unimportant.
No, I don't think that's unimportant, because almost nothing is utterly unimportant. But in this case, Kathy Hochul, we don't think is a good candidate. She her record has, she's been on the other side of positions that are very important to us. And should anything happen to the governor, obviously that would be a terrible thing. But we're not confident that Kathy Hochul would be the right person to take over. Her substantive record is very troubling. She was only in Congress for about 18 months, I believe, because she had that special election. Then she lost. She was basically districted out. But she, you know, she voted many times against, you know, Obamacare. She says she is a, you know, a gun supporter. Although she now supports Governor Cuomo's, you know, SAFE Act. She was very bad on environmental votes. So on the substantive issues, we couldn't really endorse her for that.
And by the way, I guess we should mention that this is not like elections for president and vice president of the United States. Listeners, if you are voting in the New York primary on September 9th, you can split your ticket and vote separately for governor and lieutenant governor. Correct? Terry, that's correct, right?
Yes, yes, that's correct. So this September 9th, you can choose who you want for governor, and then you choose separately who you want for the lieutenant governor on the, you know, in the Democratic primary.
Let me get one more caller in here, a Cuomo supporter, Carolyn in Glenhead. Hi, Carolyn. Thank you for calling in. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Good morning. What I have to add is that I think the tone and the tenor of the editorial was something that I was not used to seeing from the New York Times for over 20 years. I've noticed numerous changes in the New York Times, but it was almost edgy and nasty. But what I really think was ridiculous was, it was brought up by an earlier caller, and maybe Divine, you read the last line or one of the last lines of the editorial where they say he failed, you know, to do the job. Both the New York Times previous article and this editorial completely failed to address the fact that Governor Cuomo was the only person, the only governor, the only leader to have actually got a piece of legislation that was fairly strong passed. In this legislation.
And Carolyn, I'm going to leave it because your phone is breaking up so bad people can't understand you, but I could understand you. So I'm going to finish framing your question for Terry. And Terry, I think it goes to something that you were saying before, that we were talking about before. In defense of the governor, if what the Moreland Commission did was place the most possible pressure on the legislature to come up with the best possible ethics reform that he could squeeze out of this legislature, because Republicans still had veto power in the Senate, so there were places they were just not going to go. So if you accept the idea that this crowbar, as you called it, got the best deal that he could get this year, and so when he got to that best possible negotiating position, that was the time to trade it in, the Moreland Commission, for an actual bill that he could sign into law. Maybe that's what politics is all about, and he did exactly what he's supposed to do.
Well, that's what he says, yeah. And I think that, you know, overall, watching, you know, he's a great politician. He works very well in a broken system. And and we just expected more, and I think he thought, and he had promised more, that he could use, you know, both his personal power, his kind of savvy and smarts to get close loopholes on certain kinds of campaign finance donation that just don't even exist. There are no limits.
You think if he was more committed, he could have gotten a better bill from the legislature.
Well, we have to say, on same-sex marriage, which we have congratulated him for and lauded him for many times, and on the gun bill, on minimum wage, he did that. And, and he has that power to do that. He's a powerful politician, and the governor of New York State is a very powerful position. And we had expected that he would do that. He had said he would. And our expectation is the next governor, in our non-endorsement, we had said realistically, we sort of believe that he probably will be reelected, mm-hmm. that he takes this and makes that the, you know, again, promising that will be his number one agenda.
Right. Before you go, can you give me a couple of minutes on how the sausage is made? Because I'm sure our listeners are curious how you make an endorsement or non-endorsement in this case at the Times editorial board. Now, since you're the person who came on the show to talk about it, are you kind of the New York specialist and you take the lead on this and then pass it around to the other a draft to the other editorial board mm-hmm. members, or how does that work?
No, we really do debate and talk about this. I mean, we in this case we weighed the governor's accomplishments against his failings and his challengers.
Who's we? So who's we? How many people? How does that work?
We have about 12 people on the editorial board.
Full-time employees?
Yeah, pretty much. So you can see on our page that says Meet the Editorial Board,
uh-huh.
and it gives all of our journalistic backgrounds, experiences, who we are. I invite all readers to go to our website and check out the opinion page and meet the editorial board. So that's the we. We come together as a group. We have people who are specialists or whose portfolio includes, foreign affairs, national affairs,
mm-hmm.
health and environment, and in this case, state government and local politics.
The columnists who people read, they don't sit on the editorial board, or do they?
They do not sit on the editorial board. They're free agents. They're on their own. And sometimes they come up with views entirely different from ours.
Right.
But we speak for the institution, And so we have our tour voices coming in, and we have foreign affairs writers in Paris and in Japan as well. So,
They're not sitting around the room.
They're not sitting around the room.
On 40th Street. So how about the publisher, Arthur Sulzberger? I presume he's got veto power over a candidate endorsement if he wants to use it, yes?
I would say so. But Arthur Sulzberger is, he rarely ever says, well, he will, if he has strong, if he has a view and he will have a strong, if he has a strong position, he makes his case and he explains where he's coming from. But I haven't, perhaps it's happened in the past, but that usually isn't how decisions are made here. It's very, very much consensus because, as you see, we have core values, and then we have there might be kind of disagreements or distinctions, different weights given to certain factors by certain members of the individuals on the board that might be heavier than another board member might, give to that factor. Mm-hmm. And that's how. But in the end, I think we do come down. It is a consensus, and a draft of an important editorial is seen by all members, and people are, people feel completely free to offer ideas and suggestions and say, this is what I would do. This is a point I think we need to make. And so it is, in many cases, a very, not a group effort, but voices are all heard.
Terry Tang, the deputy editorial page editor at the New York Times. Hey, Terry, I really appreciate you doing this. I think a lot of editorial boards would hide behind the anonymity. You came out here and suffered some of the slings and arrows. And great conversation, and I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.